Thank you for that song. Your infinite love will prove more than enough?
Indeed it will, Kevin.
My gosh. I hate to rub it in, but to be live in the room with the music going, you know, it does something to me. And I know other people here, too. We only have a few people in the room today. But I'm pretty sure that you could feel that, too, back home. I've really been thinking about you that are at home this morning and even over the weekend. I've just been thinking about what we do here, this strange thing. I know some churches are having service, and some churches are still doing virtual, but it's such a strange, uncertain time right now, of course. I mean, obviously, that's such an obvious thing to say now. But there's something that happens, and I think I talk about it almost every week, this weird thing that happens among us as human beings, and there's some sacredness to this separation right now. I don't know how else to say it, and I want to talk about that a little bit today, but there's something here among us, and that includes you watching a screen, you know, being video broadcast too. There's something that's happening, even if you were listening to this message recorded. And that is because we always live in one infinite now. No matter how much we think that it's separated by time or by distance, we live right here, right now. No matter where we think we are. So in that way, I want to get us into our meditation in maybe a little bit of a different way today. If you are by yourself, I'd like you to imagine the eyes of someone who you have recently come into contact with. You know, it might be somebody on the street or somebody in a working in a store or something where you were shopping and you could see in their eyes something that caught your attention, your deeper attention. And if you're with somebody, I'd like you to do this very awkward thing, and that is to turn to them and look deeply in their eyes for a moment. And that's really hard to do sometimes. So just stay with that. And it gets pretty uncomfortable, especially at first, to gaze into another human being's eyes and let the walls of your own world collapse a little bit into theirs. And to realize that right now there is a tremendous amount of fear in the uncertainty. A fear of even death and dying, and a fear of being alone, even though we are right next to someone or an entire community. So let yourself just peer a little deeper now into the soul of another human being. And then silently, thank you. And as you turn back to settle into your meditation now, probably bringing your head straight forward instead because it's a little more comfortable if you did turn away, and gently bring your eyes to a close. And just feel the feelings of whatever came up for you. And if you feel a charge in your body, I just invite you to relax and let your breath expand now in your belly and your lungs. And take a nice deep breath in, like we often do on Sunday mornings. And at the top, hold that breath and squeeze all the tension at once. And then let it go. Whenever you are in the midst of uncertainty or anxiety or fear, always remember the breath trick. That you can stop and take a deep breath in, and with the exhale, release all that tension. So in that magic moment of release, we come present to our own inner world. And we know that we have just touched the soul of another. And in that sacred union, nothing will ever be the same in our life or in their life. And so now we come to contemplation, the highest form of prayer. And we contemplate a world that we would like to see. And in this contemplation is a radiation of light and love. And we know that just by this act, we lift the world. And so we move from contemplation into the presence of pure being, immersed in the Holy Spirit of life and love and wisdom. And we remain here for a few moments of pure union with God. And as we enter back into physical awareness, let's take a few moments to work with a little bit of breathing. Use your diaphragm, that little muscle in your stomach, to pull in a little bit more air with your inhale, purposely expanding and letting your belly grow, like trying to puff it out almost. And then as you exhale, the same thing, only this time at the bottom of the exhale, use your diaphragm to press out the remaining air that you brought in. Just two more like that, like a bellows in the fireplace or something, using that air to, or that muscle to really expand your belly with oxygen and life. And then as you exhale, same thing. And on this last intentional breath, take the biggest, deepest breath you can, breathing in all the light and love that you can muster. And then gently through the nostrils, letting it go with the same kind of control. And then when you're done with that, just gently come back into your body and get ready to open up your eyes, and when you are ready, you can open your eyes and bring yourself back to the present moment, whether you're in your bed, on your couch, on a comfy chair, or outside sitting on a lawn chair, which you might be able to do if the sun has come out where you're at. Well, thank you for that. It was very nourishing for me. So what does eternal life have to do with coddywampling? And what the heck is a coddywample anyway? It's such a strange thing and such a fun, kind of a joyous word, and so appropriate for these times right now. It's an English word, and doesn't it sound so English? And how much better to have an English word the very week following a little bit of Monty Python last week? But coddywampling, if you've read the email that Cindy sent out, it means basically to travel purposely towards an as yet unknown destination. And there's a couple other definitions that I really like, and one is to be completely open to limitless possibilities. And right now, it doesn't seem like we have a huge opportunity. It seems like we're sort of frozen and paralyzed in our world. But I don't think that that's true. And so when we think about our future, we can't really know what the heck's going to happen, can we? So that uncertainty can be fairly agonizing. And yet it can also be very coddywomply. In other words, very joyous and free and kind of fun and light. So the last definition of that word is to unpredict your future. And that is where it gets really interesting. Because I don't know about you, but for me, I had all these plans in my life. Things were going a certain way. And in my mind, I could see my future for 10 years at least. And I knew exactly what I was going to be doing. And it felt really good to know what I was doing. And there's that old joke that if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. And the universe just loves that. I always think of Divine Mother, the Holy Spirit, as this playful, joyous presence that giggles when we try to plan out our life too far in the future. Because life's not meant to be lived like that, obviously. Look at the world we've lived in just in our lifetime. And then when you look back through history, look at the uncertainty that has always surrounded us. So what the heck do we do? Well, I want to tell you a story, and it's a story that I love. I think I've told this story before a couple years ago. It's about Charles Fillmore and about unity and about how we kind of came into being. And so many of us know the story of our co-founders, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, and what happened. And so along the way, as they started on their spiritual path, and Myrtle had her healing prayer that she uttered and then she owned as her mantra for her life and started to change her world. And Charles looked on and said, boy, that looks really fun. I'd like to try that too. And he started some things. And one thing he played with was meditation and prayer. And he really didn't think it worked at all and he couldn't get it. And he said it was cold and calculated in the beginning. But then he started to make contact with the spirit of the universe. And that's inspiring to me and many other people. You know, before that time, Charles Fillmore was a real estate developer. And in fact, if you go to Kansas City now, there's Myrtle Avenue. There's Norton Street or Norton Avenue, which is Charles's brother. And there's all kinds of places that he developed as a real estate guy. And so when he started getting into spirituality, his whole world started to change. And one of the things that he did, him and Myrtle both, and I don't know what the timeline is on this, but they both became vegetarians. And so they said, we want to share this stuff. That's what spiritual people do that find the things. They want to share it right away. That's what Myrtle did with her prayer. And as soon as they found the benefits of eating a lot of vegetables, they said, we got to share this with people. So they began the Unity Cafe. And the Unity Cafe quickly became a hot spot in Kansas City because it was excellent food. But they ran out of vegetables pretty quick because everybody wanted to eat those things. And so Charles said, as Charles often did, well, then we'll just have our own dang farm. And so he got some real estate guy and said, let's go look at these properties. And they went and looked at a bunch. And he said, let's go look at that one way out of town there. And the real estate guy said, okay. So he brought him out there. And Charles said, this is the place. And the real estate guy said, what do you mean? There's nothing here. He says, just rocks and trees. Charles said, this is what I feel is the place. I can feel it. So this is what I want to have. And I think he got a screaming deal on that place, if I remember right. And as would any good real estate guy, you know. And so anyway, that became Unity Farm. And the first thing on a farm that you have to do is find water. And so they drilled for water, but they couldn't find any because they kept striking oil. And so there was nothing there but just some oil. And it wasn't a ton of oil, but it was enough to start to, because they didn't have any money back then, to get them some funds to start operating. And so as they drilled twice and found oil, and then on the third time, they actually did find water, and it was artesian well water, the good stuff. It's what you wanted back then. And so began Unity Farm. And so as time went on, the trees there were black cherry walnut trees, and the rock was largely granite. And so eventually, and I don't know where Lowell came along in this, but Lowell Fillmore, the Fillmore's son, became an architect and loved to design really cool buildings. And so they designed these buildings and built them out of black cherry walnut, the trees that were on the land where there was nothing, and the stone that was the granite, they built all kinds of structures out of that. And of course, that Unity Farm was very productive in growing vegetables for a while, and it became today Unity Village. And Unity Village is so vast, it's such a big place that it's a city. It has its own zip code. So from nothing, from having nothing, and from even people telling Charles, there's nothing here, our whole entire movement of Unity was founded and nurtured and grown from that place. And there's this thing about metaphysics and mysticism, and they're different from each other. They're similar, but they're different. A person who's a metaphysician likes to use the power of their mind to create things and to bring things into being, to manifest. And a mystic is different because a mystic goes from the inner voice, is guided by the inner voice, and hears a direction and follows it, even though it's greatly uncertain and unknown. So Eric Butterworth told that story, and I don't know, I probably missed some details in there. But remember, the devil's in the details. And I think the gist of it is very accurate. And that's how Charles Fillmore led his whole life, and Myrtle was much the same way. And so in that, we have this sort of a picture of from no thing to everything, from a seemingly uncertain future. We cottywomple along, and Spirit goes, hey, I've got something for you. And if we're able to listen, we can hear what it is. But if we're not able to listen, then we get very confused. So I want to read from Atom Smashing Power of the Mind, a book by Charles Fillmore, just a brief little thing where he talks about this. He talks about a core Unity teaching here. He says, when we murmur and complain, we cloud our minds, and divine mind cannot reach us or help us. Then we usually loaf, L-O-A-F, we usually loaf until something turns up that causes us to think on happier things when we go forward again. Instead of giving up to circumstances and outer events, and how pertinent is that today, we should remember that we are all very close to a kingdom of mind that would make us always happy and successful if we would cultivate it and make it and its laws a vital part of our life. And he's talking about spiritual laws. And then he says that Jesus said, our master teacher, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Well, where's Jesus now? And how's that going to help me right here, right now? Because I need some help, and I don't see Jesus in this room. Or do I? Maybe I see Jesus in every face. So what is that? He says, here is the first step in getting out of the mental cloud that obscures the light of Spirit, so that we can hear, so that we can see clearly. Take the promises of Jesus as literally and spiritually true. Right in the midst of the most desperate situation, one can proclaim the presence and power of Christ, and that is the first mental move in dissolving the darkness. Step one. You cannot think of Jesus without a feeling of freedom and light. Is that true for you? Jenny and I always talk about Jesus and Mary and the saints. We always talk about them, and we always feel that what he's talking about. You can't think of that. Like, if you think honestly about Jesus, even in his crucifixion, there's always that light that you know this guy knew something. He knew something so profound, and how the heck do I get there? And he said the first step is to call on the Christ. Well, what does that mean? And for me, what that means is kind of what we did in our meditation. When you peer deeply into the eyes of another human being, what's so fearfully crazy about it is that you're peering into your own soul, because that's the Christ consciousness, the unity of all beings that we're always talking about, that we are one and the same, expressed in 7 billion different unique expressions. And that is magnificent to behold. So right now our world is in this great upheaval, and there's all this discord and disharmony, a lot of complaining. Just grab any good newspaper and you'll see it. So how do we move out of that? How do we claim the Christ in the midst of that? Are you a mask wearer? Are you not a mask wearer? Which camp are you in? And does it just piss you off? Or does it just rattle your cage when you see somebody not doing it or somebody doing it, whatever? Well, maybe it's an opportunity. Maybe it's an opportunity to simply learn physically how to smile with your eyes. What if that could be your whole mission when you go into the store? Instead of what are you afraid of, how can I smile with my eyes into my own soul, which is in every other person? We were shopping the other day, and I got up to the check stand line there, and the gal had her blast shield on and her mask and her apparatus, you know, and I said, did you learn anything new today? And she said, yeah, I learned people can be real jerks. And I understand. Can you imagine working right now in that? And maybe you are. But what an opportunity at the same time. And so we got into a conversation with this checker, and she was such a sweet thing. Just had come back to work after some time off. And the gal that was in line behind us overheard the conversation, and we all started talking, and we all had our masks on. You know, everybody's got their mask on now. And everybody's eyes were smiling by the end of that conversation. It was such a cool thing to be a part of, you know. And we all have our opinions about what's going on right now, about this weird thing that we're in. And ain't it weird how human beings have become? So Jesus said this weird thing. I always like to read Charles Fillmore and then the other sources that are around at the time and say, what's the teaching, Jesus, that you want to share? And so Jesus said, keep telling them this one thing. And it's from Matthew, where he says, for those who want to save their life will lose it. And those who lose their life for my sake will find it. And really think about that. Trying so hard to survive. And what if we just gave it up right now? All the trying to survive. And instead, we lost our life. Practiced being dead. You know, that's the yoga pose Shavasana. At the end of a good yoga session, we lie in Shavasana. It literally means to practice being dead. And it's the most difficult yoga pose of any of the postures that require massive physical strength and balance. Lying still on your back and practicing being dead is the most difficult because we cannot let go of our story, but we can. So he says, for what will it profit them if they gain the whole world and forfeit their life? What are we after? What do we want? What do you want? What are you doing? What are you not doing? Where's your rest? And what are you willing to give up? There's this thing in the place I keep telling you about, Richard Rohr's place, Center for Action and Contemplation, that was one of the places that this came to me, and then in several other readings at once came the Paschal Mystery. And the Paschal Mystery is Jesus's, his passion, his suffering, his death, his resurrection, and his ascension. All those things, it's the mystery. It's the mystery of life and death. It's what he's talking about in the simple verse. Those who will lose their life for my sake, for Christ's sake. Oh, for Christ's sake. Those who will lose their life for my sake will gain eternal life. I don't know, Jesus. I don't know if I can trust that. Let me worry some more, and then I'll see if I can get there. And that's straight from me. That's my world sometimes. So the Paschal Mystery is this process of dying and rising, of death and new life. It happens in our seasons, and it happens in our daily life. It's why Paul said, I die daily, and so willingly he dies to that inner Christ and then gives his life to the world. And so how interesting, I was thinking this morning as I was considering this material, I guess you could call it, I was thinking about how this whole thing came along right about Easter, because I think our first service that we did virtually was Palm Sunday, which is directly before Easter. And so it's this great ascension, but yet the world is doing something else, it seems. But we are in the midst of a great death and resurrection, individually and collectively. So this Paschal mystery really speaks to me in that we all can achieve that in what moment? Just this moment. It's that old thing, what are you willing to let go of? Some people say, well, I gave my will to God, but it had a bungee cord attached to it. And it just came flying back, and I started to take control of my life again. Richard Rohr says, in order to have the capacity to move the world, we need some social distancing and detachment from the diversions and delusions of mass culture and our false self. Social distancing in a new way to think about it. If the world is being led by a higher intelligence, a higher mind, and right now this is happening, and we're supposed to be doing this social distancing, perhaps it's from a different lens that we can look at it. In the yogic teaching, in the sutras, it talks about kavalya, which is emancipation, ultimate freedom from the illusion of material death. And kavalya actually means isolation. And isn't that interesting? It's not the kind of isolation that they talk about around 12-step meetings. Don't isolate. It's the kind of isolation where we go deep into our own soul in contemplative meditation, and we join with God. And you don't have to be sitting on your pillow in a dark room to do that. You can absolutely do that in the midst of a Safeway store. That we live from that place that Charles Fillmore knew where the good stuff was. But he didn't even know that he knew it. He was just listening. We cannot grow in the great art form of action and contemplation without a strong tolerance for ambiguity and ability to allow, forgive, and contain a certain degree of anxiety and a willingness to not know, says Richard Rohr. And not even need to know. You're on a need-to-know basis, and you don't need to know. This is how we allow and encounter mystery. And there's that word again, mystery. We're in the midst of a great mystery. And how do we solve it? Well, what if it's not here to be solved? What if it's here to be lived and enjoyed? When you were gazing into the eyes of someone else or the imaginary eyes of someone else, and then you went back into your own world, what did you feel after you let go of all that feeling of anxiety and fear, if it was there for you? Wasn't it divine joy? The nature of God, it's why I love cattywampus. It's so playful. What are you doing? I'm going to cattywampus. What the heck does that mean? It means I'm going to be purposeful and not know what the heck I'm doing. It's playful, it's joyful, it's divine mother, it's the kid. We went to the Wenatchee River yesterday where it goes into Lake Wenatchee or something like that. We were at the water and this little kid, Jackson, was there. And man, he was so fun. I don't know, he must have been 5 or 6 years old, just inquisitive. We were skipping rocks together. And you know, you'd skip a rock, even if you got 2 or 3, he'd go, wow, you know. And telling the dogs what to do, and I go, tss, tss, and he's right by me, goes, tss, tss, tss. You know, they're just sponges. And that's how I want to be. I want to be like that. One of the things I miss most about our church is having the kids pigpile on me. I love that. Kevin, can you play? Let me check with the adults. Can I play? No, Kevin, sit still. No, we got to play. Let's do it. But really, we can all be rebels in that way. No matter what we think the outward appearance is, can't we play like children? And what's stopping you? You know, we might be in the midst of what we are in the midst of, but what we are in the midst of, what is it? Have you noticed, I don't know if you're a news watcher or not, but if you will turn off the news for 5 days and then come back to it, what would it sound like to you? Because sometimes when I turn it on after not hearing it, and I think, what is going on here? So try an exercise with me. And it's a weird thing to do, but I've been doing this the whole time. You've got your, you know, we've got our minds on right now. We're listening with our intellects and everything else. So stop for a minute and close your eyes. And do that simple little thing of dropping into the heart. Remember what Bob used to talk about? In your mind, you've got your little skier and ski jump with the concentration off of your nose and right down into your heart, maybe doing a flip on the way down. So move into your heart, let go of all the mind stuff, and feel. What's wrong? Nothing. And then open up your eyes again and try to keep your attention into your heart space. And I think that that's what contemplation and action is that one simple thing. Being in the world, not to not do anything, not to passively just let the world deal with its own problems and we're not going to do anything, but to be that childlike presence of divine joy when we go anywhere, to use whatever kind of restrictions seems to be being put on us as an opportunity to realize Christ's sake. And what is Christ's sake for me? What does God want me to do? And to go into the world instead of being in fear and separation, of being in complete divine blissful isolation and connection because we're coming from the Christ. So cattywampal, to travel purposely toward an as yet unknown destination, to be completely open to limitless possibilities, and to unpredict your journey. Thank you.